Good morning. We call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, April 27th, 2021, and the time is 9:23. Present today are Senators Hoffman, Senators Olson, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, Co-Chair Stedman's on other state business. I'll be along in a bit. And myself, Senator Bishop. Today's agenda will take up the following bills in order. SB 101, Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas. SB 10, Free Reduced Tuition for Essential Workers. SB 95, Search and Rescue Surplus State Property. And Senate Bill 75, that'll be our first hearing on appropriations limits, spending limits. So with that, SB 101, Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas. This will be the second hearing. We've heard public testimony on April 20th. Our intent is to consider a CS, cover fiscal notes, and look to the will of committee. CS introduction, Senator Olson. Could you move the CS, please, sir?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Finance Committee adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 101, Finance 32-LS0620/Bravo before the committee as our working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for discussion. Ms. Schein.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Erin Schein. I'm staff to Co-Chair Bishop in the Senate Finance Committee. The CS before you makes a few changes. Starting on page 1, lines 1 through 2 is an updated title. There's a new section 1. This amends AS 41.37.180 to require that at least 3 appointments to the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas by the governor are representatives from corporations organized under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And there's another conforming change for transition language that's provided in a new section, section 3, which is page 2, lines 3 through 13, that will help comply with the requirements of section 1. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you. Anyone, any questions from committee members? Seeing none, I will cover the fiscal note. Fiscal note, Department of Natural Resources, OMB component number 2733, allocation office of project management and permitting, total operating is $178,000 through years 22, 23, 24, and out through 27. The Citizens Advisory Committee on Federal Management was active in 1981 until 1999, which time it was eliminated in 2007. It was reestablished from 2008 through 17. This bill extends the termination date through June 30, 2029. Thank you. That's everything. I would like to remove my objection for adopting the CS. Any further objections? Seeing none, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 101, Finance 32-LS0620/B be moved from committee with the attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you. Seeing no further objection, the bill moves from committee. Next up is SB. Hang on a second. SB 10, free reduced tuition for essential workers. This is the fourth hearing of this bill. We heard public testimony on April 8th. My intent is to consider a CS, cover fiscal notes, and look to the will of committee. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Finance Committee adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 10, Finance 32-LS0127/N before the committee as our working document.
Thank you, Senator. I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Schein.
For the record, my name is Erin Schein. I'm staff to Co-Chair Bishop in the Senate Finance Committee. The CS before you makes a couple changes. One, it incorporates an amendment that was considered at the committee the last hearing, but also makes another change to comply with the intent of the legislation. So the first change is in section 1, page 3, line 3. It reduces the amount available for appropriation each fiscal year from $10 million to $2.5 million. The next change is actually on page 4, line 10. This changes the repeal date of the Essential Worker Grant Program established in section 1 from December 31st, 2025 to June 30th, 2025. The change of this date is to make sure that it's a 4-fiscal-year program and not a 4.5-fiscal-year program, which I believe is the intent of the sponsor. And there is also another change to Section 4, which changes the repeal date for the reporting of the program in Section 2 from December 31st of 2026 to June 30th, 2026. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection to adopting our CS as our working document? Seeing none, Senator Wilikowski, would you cover the fiscal notes, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there are like two fiscal notes. One is OMB component number 3096. It's got a zero fiscal impact in 2022. In 2022, there is a negative operating expenditure cost of $187,500. And then in FY 23, 24, 25, there is an expectation of a services charge of $123,300. In OMB, next fiscal note, OMB component 2738, there is fiscal, let's see, total operating expenditures of $2,769,000 in FY 22. And that is composed of $187,500 in personnel services, $16,000 in services, $65,500 in capital outlays, $2.5 million in grants and benefits. The $2.5 million comes from fund source 1226, which is the higher education designated general fund. There's also a fund source 1004 in the general fund, which is UGF. There is a expectation of a cost of $2,697,500 in FY 23, 24, 25, of which $2.5 million comes from the Higher Education Fund, fund source 1226. There is interagency receipts under fund source 1007 of $124,300 in FY 23, 24, 25, and then there's $73,200 fund source cost for FY 23, 24, 25 from the general fund source 1004. I think I covered it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further discussion on SB 10 before I ask for a motion? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 10, Finance, version 32-LS0127-N from committee with the attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you. SB 10 moves from committee. Bill packets coming around. Next up, SB 95, Search and Rescue. This is the second hearing of SB 95. We heard public testimony on April 7th. Our intent is to hear a quick reintroduction, look to the will of the committee. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. SB 95, this legislation would allow volunteer search and rescue organizations to organize to exercise the right of first refusal on items related to search and rescue before the property is sold, leased, or licensed, or disposed of. The right of first refusal means that organizations can buy the equipment for fair market value set by the Department of Administration. This bill just allows those volunteer search and rescue groups around the state, which performs those life-saving activities which many Alaskans depend on, to more easily obtain that equipment that they need to fulfill their life-saving mission.
Thank you. Any committee discussion? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just an issue that had come up at the last hearing was the potential, unlikely event that an organization, perhaps not registered, would obtain the title to an asset, a helicopter, a boat, and then maybe this organization would disband shortly thereafter, and who would get legal title to that? And I spoke with the bill sponsor before the hearing, and I understand they have a response back, and I just wanted to get that on the record if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have my trustee aide, Ms. Martin, here to answer that question for the senator.
Thank you. Ms. Martin, you know the drill. Put yourself on the record for the committee. Thank you.
For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. So the first question is who the property would be titled to, and it would be titled to the organizations themselves and not to individuals. And then the department has the authority to set regulations for how what happens, say, if they disbanded after 1 month after receiving the property. Their idea is that right now it would be if the property has to be used for search and rescue missions for at least 12 months after it is purchased from the state.
Thank you. Any further questions from committee members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I don't quite understand the answer to the question that was asked by Senator Wilikowski. Who gets it if they do disband?
We do have the, Ms. Martin, if you want to answer Senator Olson, and you do have lifelines.
Is Thorview with the Department of Administration online?
That is correct. Mr. View, are you online, and did you hear the conversation at the table?
Yes, good morning, committee and Mr. Chair. For the record, Thor View, Chief Accounting Officer, Department of Administration. I believe the question was, if the organization is disbanded within or prior to the 12-month period, then who would the title stat? So what we would do is stipulate in the agreement in the title transfer document that if organization is disbanded, then the state has the right to take that property back at the bid price and then allow that property to be rebid or awarded to another search and rescue organization who may have that need.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the item is just going to be repossessed by the state. Is that correct?
From Mr. View's testimony just now, it appears that is fact the protocol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Any further questions? I'm going to cover the fiscal note, and it's Department of Administration, Office of Procurement and Property Management, OMB component number 3291, and it's 0000 fiscal note. So, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like to move Senate Bill 95, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 95, State Affairs 32-LS0593/I from committee with attached physical notes and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you. SB 95 moves from committee. We're going to take a brief at ease while we change and get it set up for our presentation. Okay, we're back on the record. This is the first hearing of Senate Bill 75. Our intention is to hear an introduction and set the bill aside. Today is Senators Von Imhoff and her trustee staff, Inti Harbison. Senator Von Imhoff, good morning.
Thank you very much. So this is Senator Natasha Von Imhoff, and I'm here today to present SB 75. And if you want to put yourself on the record, Inti.
For the record, Inti Mile Harbison, staff to Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you. We have a short presentation for you. So yes, I have sat here before and have presented similar bills in the past, and I do appreciate the committee's sitting here again and doing this for SB 75. We have had one of the biggest issues is I still believe firmly that we should have a spending cap, an effective spending cap, and we're going to talk about the one that we already have in the Constitution now. Our current constitutional cap doesn't work, and it is absolutely imperative that we have a steady and predictable spending plan year after year, so when we do get new revenue, we don't balloon up the spending in response, and instead we spend it on annual operating based on what's allowable under the cap, and any excess funds should be saved either for disasters, emergencies, or to help during low revenue years. So next slide. So again, why a spending cap? A spending cap limits on how much that we can increase spending from one year to the next, meaning we don't want to grow the budget too quickly, too big too quickly. And particularly, we want to avoid overspending when we have surplus revenue. And Alaska has had a history of large swings in revenue, which you'll see in subsequent slides. And a second reason why that we need a spending cap is so that it forces us to save during the surplus revenue time, so we have a backstop or a savings account to draw upon during the tough times. And calculations show that if we had an effectual spending cap in place, we would have saved more during the high revenues in the mid-2000s and spent less out of our CBR during the low revenue years in the mid to late 2000s to the tune of about $15 billion extra dollars. We would probably still have that in our CBR account now. So what are other states doing? In 2020, 25 states had imposed limits on their government spending. States that have a spending limit are the dark kind of orangey red, and the states that have revenue limits are in the yellow, and states with both are blue. And some states have their spending caps in the Constitution as denoted as binding, which is sort of like a pixelated square, and some of them are in statute. And why does statute and Constitution makes a difference? It's a level of flexibility over time, which we'll talk about in later slides. So Alaska currently has a constitutional spending cap, but it is too high of a growth rate. We also arguably have somewhat right now a revenue limit in place through the annual POMV, which is the percent of market value structure on the permanent fund. So with a spending cap, there are four decision points. It's the growth rate, the starting point, because we have to draw a line in the sand somewhere, what's included under the cap and what's included outside the cap. So our goal today is to understand the pros and cons for each decision point, and then also to understand the pros and cons of a spending cap in statute versus the Constitution. So let's talk about the growth rate. Most states, when I looked at the 20 states that have a spending cap, most of them have some form of personal taxes as part of the spending cap or the revenue cap growth rate, like an income tax or a sales tax collected. That is a true measure of economic activity, and basically are people moving into the state and buying homes, sending their kids to school, driving on the roads, hiking in the parks, needing police protection, buying fishing licenses, etc. And if there is an increase in economic activity, then the state taxes will show it, and the state budget should go up or down in the same fashion to meet the demand. But Alaska doesn't have any personal taxes. So we use the next best thing, which is inflation, which is reflected as the Consumer Price Index, CPI, for urban Alaska and population. And other states use oftentimes all four. They'll use some percentage of population, inflation, and or income and sales tax. Alaska right now uses 100% growth of population and inflation. And that's what we have now, and it's way too high. So we need to find somehow the sweet spot, which is a certain percentage of each that makes sense over time. So we've run a bunch of modeling, and the sweet spot that we have found is 75% of the change of the annual inflation plus 25% change of population. So in particular, just to be thorough, this particular bill takes the last 5 years' average growth rate for the inflation CPI, because sometimes CPI can take somewhat of a large swing in 1 year to the next, so we want to smooth it down. So the next slide. So this is actual total growth of CPI, which is the red line over time since 1980. The present day is denoted by the vertical gray dotted line, and then we've projected it going forward. But CPI, the growth rate is the red line, and the population are the blue bars. So you can see exactly what it has done in the state of Alaska. Both have been on a steady upwards trajectory, except recently, as you can see, just when both CPI and population decreased. And this is why taking a five-year smooth out sometimes helps. So this slide right here, this is the first of a few of these kind of slides. This is a historical slide since 1980, roughly when our current constitutional spending cap started and oil became a major contributor to our state revenue. The red line is all of UGF spending, including the permanent fund dividend. The green line is all UGF revenue, including the money allocated to pay the dividend, so we can compare apples to apples. The black line on top is the current spending cap that we have in the Constitution. According to this rate, our UGF spending should be around $10 billion in 2021. So you can see that the cap was just too steep, the rate is too high. It combines both 100% of the growth of CPI and population. So what this story goes is about 25 years, between 1980 to 2005 or so, revenue and spending did not fluctuate much. Then starting around in 2005, we went on what I call Mr. Toad's wild ride. You see the big M kind of in the green there. Revenue and spending experienced very wild swings. We had 13 years total of chaos. Revenue spiked really high, and our spending cap jumped up accordingly. And then starting in 2012, our revenue went on a free fall for about 6 years, and it took a while for spending to decrease as well. During this time, we spent over $13 billion out of our CBR account to help offset the budget deficits. As you can see, there's a big jump in revenue in the green line. It went up in 2019, and that's when we passed the POMV. That's the structured draw on the permanent fund. So we spent a lot during those years and didn't put much away in the CBR, as much as we could have if we had a spending cap. And just to repeat that we did our calculation of about $15 billion. So what are the lessons learned here? As you can see, growth rate of the spending cap really matters. The black line in the Constitution was way beyond the range, realistic range. And number two, we put money away in the good years so we can use it during the lean years. So the next one. Okay, so this is the same slide. We've added two different lines here. So the red, the green, and the black lines have not changed. We have a pink dotted line. That is a hypothetical model that if we applied SB 75 growth rate, starting all the way back in 1980, at the $2.5 billion, which is what the Constitution, which is what we passed in the Constitution, we started the growth rate at $2.5 billion. If we applied our bill's growth rate over time, you can see the effectual spending cap would have been extremely helpful between 2005 and 2018, and we would have landed till about kind of where we're at today. The yellow dotted line is taking today's spending of about $4.7 billion and doing a look back using the SB 75 growth rate, which is, again, reminding, is 75% of CPI and 25% of population. If we looked back, the starting point would be about $2.3 billion. So we're kind of roughly in the ballpark here. At this rate, our spending grows about $3 billion every 40 years. rather than the $5 billion per year swings we had seen in the recent decade. So we'll pause there.
Yeah, on that, Mr. Chairman, just thinking back, there were several of us here at the table at the time, going through the 05 through today. But thinking about what was going on back in 06 through 12, 06 through 10, probably 10, there was a big spike in spending, but a lot of it had to relate to the capital budget and picking up deferred maintenance. We had built up a substantial amount of deferred maintenance back in the period where you see the red line laying fairly flat. And we had to catch up on deferred maintenance. And I think that same situation is continuing today as we've had very small capital budgets. So anyway, just a note that I think those actual expenditures were suppressed by under spending on maintenance that we had to catch up on. And then I don't know later in the presentation if we get into the operating budget. That seems to be where the challenge is in the agencies relative to our population and inflation, and capital budget's kind of a different animal with different issues. But if we could look at the growth rate of the operating budget, and as I recall, dealing with those, and Senator Hoffman sitting here was chairman for many of those years in the operating budget, those increases, although we are the appropriators, were recommended and pushed through the administration by the agencies themselves. The sitting governors at the time tried to pare back the agencies. They were coming in at, I know some of them are asking for 10 and 15% growth in a year. And the governors over that period pulled those back, and then we struggled here at the table trying to fill the holes in the operating budget and support the administration desires to hold back the agency growth. So when we get into this subject and discussions, I think it would be nice then to also take a look at a finer view of the agencies. And I recognize, Mr. Chairman, that a lot of the citizens around the state think that the legislature is all powerful and we are the ones that dictate the growth rates. But I can assure the people that the growth rates in the agencies are pushed out of the agencies themselves. And we struggle with that year after year, along with whoever the sitting governor is. So that's just a couple of comments of data points to try to put a finer point on the growth mechanisms underneath. And as another quick point, I would, Senator Von Imhoff mentioned it, we've got the percent of market value, which gives us a revenue cap, and we can't spend what we don't have. So that'll help control this historic problem that we've had.
Yes, Senator Wilikowski, if I could just dovetail on the co-chair's comments on the capital budget. Senator Von Imhoff, the other good public policy that we have to come together on, and this is a great start, right? But is getting back to the capital budget and the swings, we got to have that conversation. Are we going to get dedicated to that 1% replacement rule on deferred maintenance to eliminate that spike in these capital budgets when we do get flush? Because that's, so I'll just leave it at that. And you know what, you're nodding, you know what I mean. So, Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The red line, I'm just curious, that includes the permanent fund dividend?
That is correct.
And Mr. Chair, if I could.
Follow up.
I think in 2008 or 2000, I believe it was 2008, there was a supplemental PFD of, I think, $1,200. Is that reflected in that as well?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Senator Wilikowski. Please continue, Senator. Von Imhoff.
Thank you. And just another comment. I mentioned it earlier. One of the things to remember with Alaska, we are unique in that prior to passing the POMV, our majority of our revenue came from oil, and oil is very volatile. It's a commodity. It goes up and down. As you can see, the green line, way in the history, well before the M there in the middle, it still went up and down. And the red was above the green for a long period of time. And so that's deficit spending. And what's interesting is I found a document from the Palin administration, and it says between 1993 and 2005, the legislature appropriated over $4.8 billion over that time from the CBR. Cash was borrowed from the CBR in 94, 95, 96, 98, 99, 2000, 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005 to balance revenues and expenditures. So this state has a history of funding its annual budgets from borrowing from the CBR, so our savings account. So I think it's important that we keep that in mind as we go forward. And our CBR right now, Mr. Chairman, I think is probably less than a billion. So we don't have a fallback at this juncture now. All right, so we'll continue.
Senator Hoffman.
On that point, I think you had made it, Mr. Chairman, many times that we basically lit a match to the CBR.
Yep.
And we thought it was protected because it required 45 out of 60 votes to access, a very, very high standard. So that we would have to have 16 out of the 60 legislators not to agree to tie that up. And we struggle with that today. We say that there is no other avenue to look at, but Senator Stedman knows full well that that may not be the case. That's why there's the check behind us taking funds out of the ERA and putting into the corpus. The point is that when you have a statute that we passed, Senate Bill 26, that says we can appropriate 5% out of the ERA, that is a statute. And we at this table know how well we're following the statute as it relates to the permanent fund dividend. For the last how many years, Senator Wilkowski, we have ignored that. So I think that there's the potential to ignore the Senate Bill 26 when we come to deficits, which we do not know may materialize in the future. So what I'm saying is that there were $16, $17 billion in the CBR that had a shield around it, which is 45 out of 60 in order to access. But with our sticky little fingers as legislators, we were able to get that 45 out of 60. We have the ERA at a similar amount today, but it only takes 11 and 21, only 33 votes compared to the 45. So I think Senator across from me is well aware, Stedman is well aware that we need to be concerned about that as much as possibly be concerned about a spending limit, because from my viewpoint, I'll save those comments till after the presentation, but I just wanted to get that on the table. But there's a further concern that I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman, thank you. Senator Von Imhoff, you want to continue, please?
Thank you. This is slide 9. So this is future. This slide moves into the future. The red line, okay, well, you see the black line on top. That's our current spending cap. The red line is the governor's proposed expenditures, including all UGF and the proposed 50-50 PFD spending. The green line that you see below is the current revenue for fiscal year 21, which is around $4.7 billion. The green dotted line, and the green line basically looks at proposed revenue by the spring revenue forecast moving forward. So that includes the POMV as well as anticipated oil or mineral revenue. The green dotted line, which is sort of mixed with that red line there, this includes the governor's line item of undefined revenue. The blue and the yellow lines, which are sort of almost superimposed each other, this is the SB 75 growth rate starting at $6 billion. You see the model. So the model of ledge finance is the blue, and the Senator von Imhoff office is the yellow. So we tried to make sure that our numbers were the same. So that was our model going forward. So the next slide is, this is just taking the constitutional budget, the current constitutional out of the picture so we can up the scale so you can see the discrepancy. Pardon? Why don't you go to talk about that?
For the record, into Mile Harbison, staff to Senator von Imhoff. We've also added back the SB 75 limit if it started at $2.5 billion in FY83 so that you can get a comparison between our proposed SB 75 model compared to that pink line coming through from FY22 on.
So basically, we would be at pretty much the governor's spending right now and the governor's revenue right now. But again, we're about $1.5 billion or $1.2 billion short, because that's the line item roughly of the undefined revenue at this juncture. So I've been mentioning that I'm starting our cap at $6 billion. Now, why is that? Let's do the next slide. Because the other, so you have the growth rate, but then you have a starting. Senator Hoffman.
Before we go forward, the red line, what is your proposed funding level for the PFD in that red line?
So the 2022 was the governor's proposed full statutory, and then moving forward is the governor's proposed 50-50 POMV split.
And when does that take place?
I believe in 23.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator von Imhoff, continue, please.
Thank you. So we needed a starting point. Right now we're spending about 4.7, let's just round up to $5 billion, but we had talked to this committee last year or the year before and decided to put it up to $6 billion. Now keep in mind that a spending cap is not a spending goal. It's just a reasonable cap to keep the legislature's budget process in check. We have to draw a line in the sand somewhere. Right now, the line in SB 75 is just proposed at $6 billion. We are not spending that much in UGF, but it gives us some headroom for the foreseeable future. We have chosen to peg that starting point based on current activity, what is happening in both the revenue and the expense side. So this slide looks at revenue. As you can see, our revenues are well below the $6 billion mark, even if we add nearly $1 billion a year from new sources, which is the second to the last dollar amount, and that's from the governor's 10-year proposed plan. If you see the green highlighted bar at the bottom, we're still below the $6 billion. Next slide. Now, this is expenses as a comparison. This is what we spent in 2019, 20, and 21, and then moving forward, anticipating for 22 through 26. Now, our spending cap bill does not include debt. And that's retirement debt, school bond debt reimbursement, general obligation bond debt. So we've excluded that in the calculation, and that's those red numbers there. The spending cap bill does include spending for the permanent fund dividend, and we've modeled here the actual billions or millions of dollars spent on the PFD from 2019 through 2021, and then going forward, this is modeling the governor's 50-50 POMV split starting in 2023. By looking at the bright orange line, you can see that we're still under the cap in this scenario. Okay. This bill proposes what's included and excluded. In this bill, anything that is spent on UGF, undesignated general funds, that includes all agency spending, retirement, capital, and the permanent fund dividend. What's excluded is anything towards the permanent fund corpus, debt payments, disaster funding, deposit into savings account, like replenishing the CBR, and of course, federal and designated funds. There is a provision under Section 4 regarding limiting capital. The bill reads, the legislature may appropriate an additional capital amount in excess of the appropriation limit. Let's say that we actually meet our limit. We can additional appropriation for capital improvements that may not exceed 5% of the total appropriation limit for that fiscal year. So for example, if we hit the cap, our total limit is $6 billion. That would mean we could add no more than $300 million in capital. This was done at this committee a couple years ago, and this was why. It was to essentially avoid flooding the industry with too much capital dollars in 1 year. We do have a finite number of construction companies, construction workers, and a short building season. There's only so much capacity that Alaska can absorb in a given year. We've seen in the past that if we allocate too much construction dollars in one given year, it overheats the economy. And we just end up doing the same number of projects anyway, and they just all cost more in the end. So we added this provision in Section 4.
Senator Stedman, then Senator Wilson.
If she's done with the slide.
We're done.
Okay. Couple questions, comments. The retirement, just for clarity, I think the retirement would be not the retirement for the ongoing payroll, health and welfare, but the unfunded liability that we face, right? And we're, you know, we don't control that as much as we can't control that as much as we like. It's derived off of investment returns and longevity of the retired employees and so on and so forth. But so as a requirement to increase the expenditures for the unfunded liability goes, in this scenario, we would have to then, if we're at our cap, we'd have to be decreasing other operational costs, the ongoing operational costs of the state to stay within that. That's just as a footnote to what that is. And then dealing with disaster funding being excluded, I assume that would have a fairly wide scope to include what kind of like what we're dealing with now, ERA funds, American Recovery Act funds, or any other stimulus coming out of Washington, or if we have a earthquake, tidal wave, so on and so forth. So there's, you know, those points to think about. And then the comment on the concern that we face today, and we've heard many times before over the years, is overheating the economy. I don't think we really overheated it too much back when we had big capital budgets. We heard a lot of that conversation by some folks at the time. And we built up our labor pool, increasing multiple trades across the state for many years, and then lost a lot of that labor force to Washington and Oregon, and as our capital budgets went flat. That is, overheating is a concern, but I don't think that's really happened in the past in any significant way, because frankly, DOT can't push the projects through their system, and there's only so many contractors. So anyway, there's just a couple of points, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, we need to consider. And then as far as, may I add one more thing, debt payments. Why would we want to, what's the reasoning for excluding debt service from our spending cap? And just kind of your thoughts on that, and the thoughts of then having a table here, want to push more bonds to increase more debt to get it out from under the spending cap to balloon up the capital budget.
So thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. On the record, debt service currently is not included in the constitutional spending cap that we have now. I'm just making it consistent. There were also conversations in the past in regards to debt technically should be outside because it does, it is independent oftentimes to, if we have to go for capital, like let's say if we can't afford capital as much as we'd like, then we could go to debt and we don't want to be hamstrung to do that, especially if we need that to stimulate the economy. So there was an issue of having a suggestion of putting debt outside. But I'm, to me, Mr. Chairman, I'm okay with if this committee, you know, wants to look at it, doing it a different way.
Thank you. Senator Wilson, then Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. So looking at this, maybe this is the capital of 5%, but it may fall without. Would this limit our ability to take advantage of large federal infrastructure bills, which require the, some of those large matching grant funds or just matching funds?
So you will see in the next slide. I can answer that in the next slide if you don't mind waiting. Okay.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My point that I'd like to make is in regards to including the permanent fund dividend in the calculation. Currently, the permanent fund dividend is excluded, and that's constitutionally established. I point this out because we have a constitutional 121-day session, and we tried a 90-day statutory session. I think we achieved that statutory goal once. The legislature always, in recent history, has ignored the statute on the 90-day and has honored the constitutional provision of 121 days. So if we keep the appropriation limit regarding the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend excluded, future legislators, I believe, will do the same. They will ignore the provisions of including the permanent fund dividend. Many people say the permanent fund dividend is the third rail of government. In today's political climate, it may even be the first rail of government in many people's eyes. So I'm concerned that if we include it here, what does it say about all of the rest of the statute and its validity when in the future, if the legislature votes for this, but from a practical standpoint, follows the Constitution?
So, Mr. Chairman, I can answer this in the next slide, but I will just, I'll start off with this slide, then I'll take my final slide, which I talk about the the Constitution versus the statute. Right here, you can see the green line, bright green line at the bottom, is our current projected revenue for the foreseeable future, and that is with oil and oil taxes that we have now and the POMV. And then the spending is the red line. Now, we would have to raise taxes of some sort to bring the two together so it's a balanced budget. So the fact of the matter is it's there are factors to Senator Hoffman's point of the permanent fund dividend or a large capital budget or whatnot. If we want to spend a permanent fund dividend to the statutory amount or even just half of the statutory amount, we will need to have new revenue. And there is a political issue of taking revenue from businesses or personal people or the citizens and depositing it into the checking account of their neighbor. But that's another issue to consider. We're not going to talk about that today. What we're going to talk about are the Constitution versus statute, which many of the senators have alluded to today. Right now, our constitutional spending cap, the rate is too high. Again, it combines both inflation and population. We have imperfect factors going into the growth rate and the constitutional rate doesn't work. Our model shows that a 75/25 between inflation and population works pretty well, but I recommend that we test it in real life and see how it fits. Everyone has good intentions, but without periodic review, we don't know the full consequences. I say let's keep it flexible in the near future, keep it in statute for now, and check it again in 3 years. That being said, a statutory spending cap has no teeth. Any legislature can override a statute, any year, each year, by simply deciding what they want to appropriate for a particular expense, whether it be for education or Medicaid or transportation or a permanent fund dividend, simply by a majority vote. If a spending cap is in the Constitution, it becomes much more difficult. We'll have provisions in there, like a vote threshold. With a statute, a legislature can override a spending cap in statute with a simple majority vote, and the spending cap can be reached. So whether we want to spend it on federal matching grants to Senator Wilson's, yes, if this spending cap is in a statute, we can do whatever we want. In essence, it has no teeth. The only issue that we have is the political fallout that we have to deal with it. That being said, I still recommend that we have it in the statute for the next couple years, test drive it, so to speak, let it simmer for a bit and see how it fits. It says, number three, what happens if we have excess revenue? We can spend it however we want by a simple majority vote. In an ideal world, I would like to put a provision in a bill or in the Constitution that says we can spend any excess revenue by a certain percentage on certain things, like I'm making this up. This is just hypothetical. Maybe 30% on debt, 30% in savings, 30% for an additional bonus PFD or something like that. But again, as of now, we cannot tie the hands of future legislators, so this is technically will be guidance versus binding. Number four and five are just small provisions in the bill. Section one does specify that the legislative finance department must analyze the appropriation limit and prepare a report every 3 years starting in January of 2024. This way the legislature can review the effectiveness of the statute on a periodic basis. This will help keep it on the forefront. And then we have a governor's provision. Section 5 states that when the governor submits his annual budget in December, he will also submit a brief report confirming that the budget is, in fact, under the statutory spending cap. And that, Mr. Chairman, is my presentation.
I'd just like to make a comment on number three, and I apologize to Senator Wilson. I think I had you down for a question. But if I could just comment on number three, what happens if we have excess revenue? I'm with you all the way on your concept, but the Constitution says we have to pay back the CBR at the end of the year with any excess revenue. And you and I have had this discussion many times. I've told people at home, it's only going to take us 120 years to pay back what we've borrowed from the CBR now at $100 million a year. So anyway, it's just my editorial comment. Senator Wilson? No. Senator Stedman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, we've had numerous discussions on this subject over the years and the last several years, but just food for thought. And I think we've all struggled, and some of us have been on municipal level service, public service councils or assemblies. They face the same issue. Federal government, too. If there's money, the governmental agencies seem to want to spend it. And the best way that I've believed to control spending is through constraining the cash flow. We have to have a balanced budget by the Constitution, and if we don't have the cash, we can't spend it. We have in the Constitution, it also blocks our ability to borrow. We have to borrow only for capital projects, so we can't go borrow for operational costs willy-nilly. I think the key to cracking this nut is to shift the direction a little bit and concentrate on controlling a cash flow, and that's through the percent of market value, as referenced here in the presentation, is our major source of revenue now. But it's a 5% payout, and it's too high. That number needs to come down, in my opinion, and we've had presentations from consultants to the permanent funds, basically shining the light on that. It's a little on the high side. sort of successfully implement cost controls across the state on our operations, it's through restricting the cash flow. And if we could come to a conclusion or a adoption of a lower spending rate at 4.5% or 4.75%, I like 4.5, and end up getting that in the Constitution so we can't go into the permanent fund and take out more than that, that throttles back our ability to spend. We do have, as Senator Von Imhoff mentioned, we have a structural deficit issue that she showed here plainly on some of the charts that we're going to have to fix somehow, either through revenue enhancements or spending reductions. But clearly, you want to throttle back government spending and strangle off the cash flow. Because, as mentioned earlier, the legislature will just ignore a statute and change it for a year in the operating budget. And as members of the legislature come and go, the attitudes change. Some are more fiscally conservative, and sometimes they're more on the spend and feel-good side. So, and once the money's spent, it's gone. So anyway, those are just some comments. I've had numerous discussions with Senator Von Imhoff on this subject matter. I think everybody in this table is concerned about the growth of the government and government spending. And just we got to figure out how to handle it.
Other comments before we go to Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Von Imhoff, you were talking about when you're looking at page 13. What's included? You talked about a 75-25 split. Can you expand on that and what your thoughts were that it may have to be adjusted depending on what happened?
When you talked about 75-25, that's the growth rate. Okay. So that's not what's included or excluded. The growth rate, going back to the growth rate, is 75%.
Okay.
Hold on here. Yeah. So 75% of the CPI inflation and 25% of population, you add those up, and that's our growth rate for our proposed bill.
Mm-hmm.
When I was talking about excess revenue, there is nothing in the bill that addresses excess revenue. I just was merely pondering, musing hypothetically, if there was excess revenue, and then I made a suggestion of 25% to this, 25% to that, for example, and that was it. That's not in the bill.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. No further questions. Mr. Harbison will go through a sectional.
For the record, Intermile Harbison, staff to Senator Von Imhoff. Senate Bill 75, Sectional Analysis. Section 1 amends AS 2420-231 to add analyzing and preparing a report on the appropriation limit enacted by this bill to the duties of the Legislative Finance Division. Section 2 enacts AS 2420-236, which requires the Legislative Finance Division to deliver a report about its analysis of the appropriation limit enacted by this bill and allowed growth rate to the chairs of the Finance Committee every 3 years. Section 3 amends AS 375540 to remove reference to the current statutory spending limit, which is repealed by this bill. Section 4 enacts AS 375545, which is the new appropriation limit. Paragraph A establishes parameters of the limit. It includes all unrestricted general funds, appropriations for agency spending, permanent fund dividends, retirement obligations, and capital projects. Does not include reappropriations of federal funds, designated general fund spending, program receipts, money received from non-state sources for specific purposes, or the exclusions listed in paragraph B. The starting point is $6 billion for FY22 with a growth rate based on the 75% of cumulative change in inflation and 25% of the cumulative change in the state population, and defines how the growth rate is calculated. Paragraph B lists the exclusions to the appropriation limit. 1, appropriations to the permanent fund principal corpus. 2, dividend payments. 3, disaster funding. And 4, deposits into savings accounts and transfers into the accounts that require additional legislative action to spend. Paragraph C allows additional 5% above the limit to be spent on capital projects. Paragraph D defines the terms debt obligation, programs receipts, and unrestricted general funds for the purposes of this section. Section 5 enacts AS 37720F, which requires the governor to submit, along with the annual budget, a report noting whether the proposal is within the spending limit. The report must be updated to include any supplemental appropriations and budget amendments. Section 6 repeals the current statutory appropriation limit in AS 37540B, a section made obsolete by the repeal of AS 37540C, and outdated language related to the statutory budget reserve in AS 37540E. Section 7 through 10, applicability, transition and effective date language that specifies when the new appropriation limit and reporting requirements will take effect. The limit would apply to the FY 2022 budget. The governor would be required to file the necessary reports for the proposed budgets starting in December 2021 and the Legislative Finance would prepare the first analysis report in 2024.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? We're going to go to public comment here in just a second. Public testimony. So we're opening public testimony. Up first in Homer is a Mr. Charlie Franz, I believe. Can you hear us, Charlie? And if you can, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. This is Charlie Franz, F-R-A-N-Z. I'm a resident of Homer, Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning. I want to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 75. I think the intent of the bill is commendable, but the actual provisions of the bill make it nothing more than window dressing. A $6 billion appropriation limit is incredibly excessive when we already have a significant deficit at the current appropriation level of about $4.5 billion. I wouldn't use this approach to develop my own personal budget or my business budget. I doubt that you would either. Why then should we use it for the state budget? The Finance Committee should reject this bill and develop a realistic bill that will base appropriation limits on expected revenue rather than on past spending. Thank you for your service to our state and for the opportunity to testify. You have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. France. Next, we're going to Big Lake and Bert Houtling. I probably butchered that, but if you can hear us, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Hi, my name is Bert Houtling. I am based out of Big Lake. I'm testifying today on the behalf of my child and the 3,900 Alaskans that follow my word here. And we are 100% against SB 75. This is just another way to solidify the theft of the permanent fund dividend by putting it underneath this cap. This is going completely against the statutory PFD laws that we have currently in place, and it needs to be rejected resoundingly. This, again, is just an attempt to try to pad the pockets of the state and capital budget to go to the special interests of Alaska, ignoring the majority of Alaskans who, especially in this last past year, have been devastated by the COVID-19 and the drastic draconian lockdowns that have been placed upon us all. Businesses who have lost everything, children who are no longer getting an education. We are the worst in the nation. And you think by stealing our permanent fund dividends, this is going to help Alaskans? It's going to do nothing but detrimentally hurt Alaskans. Again, I completely reject this bill. If you truly want to put a spending cap in place, I suggest you guys pass SJR1. This would be a true spending cap limit. It would tell you exactly what you have allowed to be able to spend on the state and capital budget, not allowing you to increase it while decreasing our PFDs to cover those increased costs that you have. Thank you for allowing me for my time to testify today.
Thank you for your comments, sir, and have a good day. Okay, public comment is closed. That's all we had online this morning. Any other action to the committee before we set this bill aside? We'll be setting this bill aside for further review. Next meeting's tomorrow. On the agenda is SB 97, State Land Sales and Leases. We're done at 10:30.